Okay, well, I make it 12 o'clock on the dot, and good afternoon to everybody. Thanks for joining us on our webinar this afternoon. This is all about the Treasury Committee report that's been submitted to government, and the government has subsequently responded, and it's entitled Tax After Coronavirus. Lots of detail in that report, and the idea of our session today is to talk around that report. And what I'll do now is hand over to Anne-Marie Dunn. And Anne-Marie can introduce you to the rest of our team today. Anne-Marie has very kindly agreed to facilitate this session for us, and we'll make time at the end for any other questions you may have. So over to you, Anne-Marie.
Thanks very much, Jo. Welcome to those who've had the time to attend today. So what we're doing today, as Jo said, is we know there's great concern with all our clients and with ourselves on what the future of UK taxes will be. As Jo said, partly this is prompted by, and partly what we'll talk about today, is that the House of Commons Treasury Committee did undertake a report about the long-term nature of UK taxes and some recommendations to the government. The government responded, that was published in March, and in May the government has given a response. So that gives us a little bit of a view and roadmap ahead as to what we think is coming. But this isn't just prompted by coronavirus. This has been ongoing now for 5 or 10 years that the government, successive governments have committed to future support of age-related issues in the economy with pensions, healthcare, elderly care, and with an aging population. All governments have seen that the tax take needs to pick up somewhere, and we've seen some things happening over the last few years to try and to deal with that. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to lead it as a question and answer session across all our team. We've got specialists here from our WMT team in corporate tax, income tax, inheritance tax, employment tax, VAT, capital gains tax. We're going to cover all of those taxes. Feel free to pop any questions in as we're chatting and commenting on those particular areas, and we'll come to all those areas as we go on, and I'll introduce each person in turn rather than giving you all our panelists in one go as we come to talk about them. So the area I'm going to start on is corporate taxes. This is an area that isn't within the government's triple lock already published on income tax, national insurance, and VAT. So it's the first one we have seen some changes announced. And so I'm going to get Vicky Nicol, our corporate tax director, to introduce herself. And Vicky, then we can start chatting about the recent changes and how that compares to what has been in that report and recommended, please.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Hi there, my name's Vicky Nicol. I look after the corporate tax offering here at WMT, looking after our corporates and our companies, our owner managed businesses on all their corporate tax issues. So I'll be talking through, as Anne-Marie mentioned, what the changes are. Corporate tax and the changes to corporate tax are the one certainty that the HMRC, that we do have from HMRC, from the government, rather. That was the change that was introduced in the budget that we've just had in March. The Treasury Committee observed that the UK tax rate was comparatively low in relation to into other G7 countries. It's not a tax haven, it's not on a par with Ireland, but it's not a reason that corporates or multinationals might not choose to come to the UK. So they felt there was a bit of flexibility or room for manoeuvre there to increase the rates without there being such a huge negative impact. So that's the one we've seen the first rise for. We know that corporate tax rate is moving from 19% up to 25% from April 2023.
Yeah, thanks, Vicky. And do you think there would be further rises to come in that rate?
I think there's possibility for that. 10 years ago, we were at 28% in the UK. It had been previously to that, it was 30%. So I think there might still be some more wiggle room. This immediate hike of 6% is only for corporates who are making profits. So the idea being, as has historically, you kind of people have taken out what they put in. So you're not going to receive that tax burden until you are in a position that you're making profits. £250,000 is the new entry level to that 25% rate. But the increase in the tax rate has been accompanied by a couple of sweeteners, shall we say, in that there's been an extension to the corporation tax loss carryback rules. So rather than just carrying your losses back against one period, we're now looking at a temporary period where you can carry back those losses for up to 3 years. So there's further room to claim more tax back if you've been loss making. Similarly, we've seen an extension or a maintaining of the annual investment allowance across all businesses of £1 million for in relation to capital spend that's here until the end of this year, as well as a super deduction of 130%, where companies investing in their fixed assets can get a super deduction of up to 130% of the value of that spend in the next 2 years in preparation for this corporation tax hike. So potentially some further rises, but I think we have the certainty there for the next few years in knowing what's happening with corporate
tax. That's interesting, because the government's, what people are worried about tax changes, they have said they will try to give advanced knowledge. So we have got that there, that we have got a few years to plan. They've certainly made it clear they don't intend to increase taxes immediately till the economy recovers. So I think they see part of this investment allowance and things trying to boost the economy, don't they, to try and get things going.
Yes, I think it's modelled in a way that those who can shoulder the burden can, and then there's incentives there for people who are still struggling. The other point I was just going to mention was it's not just the raising of the corporate tax, it's that the Treasury Committee has highlighted the need for reform in certain areas. So what we might see are some further distinctions between certain types of companies, most notably the recent G7 agreement on the tech tax, on the digital services tax, which UK led the way on. But now we've got an international agreement, at least amongst the G7, for a specific area of tax, minimum global rate of 15% on a particular type of company.
Yeah, definitely. And then there's obviously a tapering rate, because there is smaller businesses still get to benefit from the lower rate. Goes against their principle of simplifying taxes. It's adding complexity back in there. And I suppose it gives potential scope for future raises, even for smaller businesses, maybe.
Long term. So we know that it's a £250,000 profits for the 25%. But as you say, it's that marginal rate between profits of £50,000 and £250,000. So definitely back into the area of looking at your associated companies, planning what your results will be, scoping that out from a real perspective, in-year planning, rather than waiting to see what's happened post-year end.
What else do you think companies could be thinking about if they know they're going to encounter this higher rate in a few years' time, if they're very profitable businesses or projections to get profitable? Are there things businesses can be thinking about now?
I think the key, as I say, is planning in year. We are back to lots of different intricacies of associated companies impacting whether you're in the quarterly instalment regime, cross charges, how you use that group relief.
Some people may not necessarily know what that means, the associated company rule. So those limits are split by every company under the same control.
That's right. Pretty much, yes. It's not just group companies. They're now expanding that definition for companies, as you say, under the same control of the same set of shareholders, and where there's interrelated business activities. So it's not just if your profits are over the 250,000, that limit is split by the number of associated companies in that group. So it might be that you're hitting that level a lot sooner or a lot quicker than you might have anticipated. So understanding that in year or previous year, if you're mapping out your profits, you've got the time to look at how best to potentially spend money in different companies. If we're talking about a group, we've got the flexibility, if you like, of the losses. Although we can carry back for 3 years now, we know we're carrying back against profits at a 19% rate, whereas that might be more useful to carry forward losses against a 25% rate in future, or a bit of both. You could do it now for some cash flow and then resubmit corporation tax returns to move the loss to your future periods when you know you're going to be profitable, or when you know you're profitable in those periods. Certainly encouragement as well on capital spend. Although we've got this super deduction and an increase, an extension to the investment allowance, it still means putting your hand in your pocket and spending that cash now. So companies should be wary of, if they really can't afford that spend, is it really giving them the benefit against the tax bill? Is it better to keep the cash? Plan, I think, for the next few years.
One of the questions that's popped in is obviously with the jump in potential tax rises from 19 to 25% for people thinking about what structure to operate a company in. should that rate put them off operating within a company? I don't know if you've got a view on that. I've certainly got a few views, and I'll add in. And
yes, I think this it certainly changes your modelling when you're sort of doing your calculations as to what that take home is going to be operating through a company. Of course, this is going to make a difference. As we've mentioned, it's for profits over 50,000 to get into the marginal rate, so people might think it's okay while profits are smaller, but absolutely it's a factor to consider. It's also running hand in hand with the, which Peter will come on to, the question about trying to raise those income tax, the off-payroll working, the I-35 issue, and trying to put people off operating as a corporate if it is just for securing that lower tax rate rather than it being the commercially the right thing for them to do.
Yeah, I think that's the key bit. I would say that I don't think these tax rates will change whether a company's the right structure for somebody or not the right structure. If a business is what I call a lifestyle business, every pound earned and pound taken out, going for simplicity and doing those tax numbers can be important. And for many years now, if you're a high earner, just taking every pound you earn out of your business, actually staying unincorporated has always been the right answer, even if there's very marginal differences since they've raised dividend rates. But I think it's always a commercial decision. Companies bring a lot of other advantages, which we can come on to later, about inheritance tax planning and small interest planning and keeping money in and timing. You have control over when things come in and out. The corporate rates, if you're keeping most of the money in, is still much lower than the income tax rates. But if you need most of the money out, then yes, you do need a bit of planning, but it should be a commercially driven decision. It's my personal view. I think we'll move over now to some income tax changes. So Paula, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit and tell us what you see happening and what's already happened on the income tax side of things for people, please?
Yes. Hello there. Yeah, I'm Paula Jeffs. I'm the private client partner at WMT. I look after the tax return service and personal tax planning, and I specialise in inheritance tax. So really, it seems, following the government's response to the Treasury Committee's report, that there is unlikely to be any significant tax rises in the short term. And as you said, Anne-Marie, they don't feel the time is right and they don't want to damage the economy. Also, the Conservative government's manifesto has committed them to the triple lock for the rest of this parliament. And that means that they have made a pledge not to increase any income tax, national insurance or VAT. Now, what the Chancellor did do in the last budget in the spring was to set out that there was going to be no increases in the allowances or the tax band thresholds for the next 5 years until April 2026. So that means by not increasing the basic rate band or the higher rate band or the personal allowances, even by inflation, it is ultimately going to increase the income tax and national insurance that is paid by all of us on income.
Right. And is there things people can do to plan for that change coming in the future, even though they know the rates or there's increases by stealth? What would you do you see people considering and what could be quite useful to do?
I think definitely if consider pension tax relief. I mean, at the moment we've still got high rate relief, and I think that could well be withdrawn. So I would certainly consider maximising your pension contributions over the next few years.
That's interesting. Someone has just asked about whether we thought pensions relief would go. So yeah, I think that is on.
There's been a lot in the press about that. Yeah, I mean, it's currently restricted any as well for people earning over 150,000, but they could take that away for anybody in the 40% tax band. I would certainly use your ISA allowance every year, build up your pot to get that tax-free income every year. Also consider making some gifts. I mean, I know we're going to talk about capital gains tax later on, but the rates really are quite low at the moment. So think about making those gifts. And also, you know, for inheritance tax at the moment, you can make those gifts, and providing you survive 7 years, there's no immediate inheritance tax.
We haven't actually talked about inheritance tax yet. So what do you see there on the government's agenda with inheritance tax? Do you see, now I'm going to bring up capital taxes a bit later, but you've raised it.
Sorry, last week.
That's fine. So What do you think is on the cards for inheritance tax?
Well, again, it's under review. They do keep saying it needs to be looked at and reviewed. But again, for the short term, no real changes. I mean, the current nil rate band of 325,000 that's been in place since 2009, they have said again in the budget that's not going to be increased until April 2026. So obviously, you know, as property prices increase over the next few years, the tax take will be higher on that. You know, the residential nil rate band of 175,000, that's also been set and not to increase until April 2026, as well as the allowance where you start to, they withdraw the residential nil rate band, that's set at 2 million. So again, gradually estates are going to go over that in the next few years, and with, you know, 40% inheritance tax, which is a hefty tax, more and more estates are going to fall into that category.
Yeah, certainly. What about landlords? So we this is an area that's had a lot of change over many years, those are with property and property taxes. Is there anything landlords should be aware of with tax rate
definitely changes? From April 2023, landlords are going to have to report their rental profits by filing quarterly returns. So this is commonly known as MTD, making tax digital. Now, if your rental income, it's got to be over 10,000 a year. But certainly I would sort of research that, become aware of it. And we as a firm recommend the digital software Xero. So I would suggest they look into that and obviously come and ask us if they've got any questions.
Yeah, agreed. I think the whole shift, the government has been very clear on where it is heading in terms of digitalisation of tax in the UK. And although it's only started on people doing VAT returns to start with, it's going to affect all taxpayers, companies, small businesses who are not incorporated, and as you said, landlords, quite soon. And so part of increasing tax take is not just about getting the tax take up, but getting it quicker and sooner and not missing people. And so this whole shift towards real-time reporting, real-time sending in is somewhere everyone will need to go, and all businesses and all individuals who are subject to tax returns will need to get up to speed with keeping digital records and sending information in more regularly. And I certainly can see within the longer term, you know, tax receipts coming up. I mean, this week they're even talking about looking into changing the year end from 5th of April, aren't they? So just in terms of when things are reported, and we've already seen shifts in the way tax needs to be paid. So for capital gains tax on residential property now having to be paid within 30 days and gains produced and tax paid over, all sorts of changes. Vicky, I'm going to come on to stamp duty land tax, because when we're talking about landlords, the UK economy has a lot of property investors, either in corporates or individually, and we deal with a lot of those looking at both those structures. Yeah. And the stamp duty land tax is for any property, particularly those not your, you know, is been a big area. What's been mentioned on that side of things, and how do they see that impacting?
Yes. So the Treasury have identified this as an area that is contributing to that, the SDLT as a tax is contributing to general inflexibilities and somewhat stagnation in labour markets and the economy in general. It's a prohibitive tax that stops people moving, transactions happening. So they have suggested that this really should be an area that is put down on the list for reform and considerable reform. The government response to this was they feel they've already taken steps to address this one. 2014 saw the change in how SDLT is calculated. So it used to be when you get over a certain level, that's the percentage. Now it's staggered, and it's staggered with quite a high starting point. So they feel they've addressed that for fairness. They've, as we know, we're currently seeing an extension to the SDLT holiday for the residential purchases.
We've definitely seen the impact on the economy and on
absolutely
property prices those holidays.
Which you would think that the dramatic increase in that is evidence in itself that they should be taking further reform on it, but they've said they feel they've addressed it, particularly with further help to first-time buyers. It's about 11 billion a year contribution to the UK coffers, so they've said that that's not an area that they feel they're going to be addressing. They don't want to be reducing that area of the tax take.
Peter, I think we're going to move on now to some employment taxes. Would you like to give us an introduction to yourself and then what you see as the main changes that may affect employers in the coming years?
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Hello, everyone. My name's Peter Davis. I'm an employment tax partner with WMT, so look after anything and everything to do with employment and all of the issues that come from that. I think there were two things principally for employing businesses to be considering. One is a more short-term issue, which the government has been taking steps for a number of years now to try and have more and more workers treated as employees on payrolls, subject to PAYE, rather than working in other ways. So, for example, as contractors, as consultants, as personal limited companies as well. There's been some significant changes this year, which came in this April, which the government hopes will bring an increased tax take through PAYE and employees and employers' national insurance. I think we're likely to see further movement on this direction. And the government has already hinted that it may want to start considering things like a statutory definition of what is an employee, which at the moment doesn't exist in law. The courts have also shown more and more of an appetite to get involved in these sorts of questions as well, which obviously have a knock-on impact to the level of taxation costs that employers bear. So we've had a number of cases going through the courts, most notably involving Uber. So that particular case, which went to the Supreme Court back in March, that led to Uber immediately reclassifying all of their drivers as employees subject to PAYE. So in terms of the taxation cost to Uber as a business, that will now bring very significant extra implications, employer national insurance, pension contributions, various statutory payments and obligations. And I think we can see the climate moving further and further in this direction. I think the other thing is a more long-term aim as well that government has had. So governments for probably the last decade now have publicly committed to an ultimate merging of income tax and national insurance. And obviously with employers having to pay an element of national insurance, it's a question that's very relevant for them. It is a long-term objective, and the main reason for that is it's fiendishly complicated to bring two completely different systems together. And they're not just different systems in terms of technicalities and rates and allowances, they're culturally different systems as well. So national insurance is a contributory system whereby people pay in return for something back. State pension, an entitlement to benefits, healthcare, and so forth, which is conceptually very different from income tax. The other big issue, of course, is that with national insurance, there is this employer's element. And what would we do about that if we bring the two things together? Would we simply put an increase in corporation tax in place instead to try and recover the money? That brings its own issues with it as well. But there's a publicly stated commitment from the government that they will want to continue to look at this and to try and move further in that direction. So I think that's an area that employers just need to keep a watching brief on as well, because in the long term, that could have a very material impact on them.
Great, agreed. I think I might move over to VAT now. So Marcus, I'd like you to introduce yourself, please, and perhaps give us an overview of what you think the outlook for VAT is.
Yes, good morning, everybody. My name is Marcus Ward, and I'm a WMT's VAT consultant. I don't do anything else, so there we are. The main changes in VAT and the potential changes in the future are pretty much down to Brexit, I would say. We don't have to harmonise with the EU anymore, so we can deviate, we can set our own rules. We're not bound by EU legislation. Whether there will be any significant changes to VAT, I very much doubt it. It brings in £134 billion a year to the government, which compares to £50 billion in corporation tax. So it's a significant earner. there have been rumours, comments that it is possible for the UK now to do away with VAT, but those numbers suggest that's not going to happen. Will it be replaced by another indirect tax? Very unlikely, for lots of practical reasons. Will the VAT rate go up? Well, we've got the triple lock, of course. However, it has been noted that 1p increase in VAT will lead to £6.7 billion increase in tax take for the government. So I wouldn't rule that out at all, despite the triple lock. The other theory is that they may well broaden the VAT base, include certain things that are VAT-free or reduce rates, things that exempt things like financial services and insurance that might come within the VAT net, which again is VAT by stealth, as been said.
What about the threshold at which VAT begins to be an issue for businesses when they have to start registering and charging VAT?
That's been a hot topic lately. 2-3 years ago, they had a huge exercise, calls for evidence on whether it was a problem being set at 85,000 a year, which is the highest in the world. It is a cliff edge, 84,000, you're not VAT registered, grow the business £2,000 more and you are VAT registered. So the evidence sort of suggested that smaller businesses that were not VAT registered tend to sort of not expand because a VAT hit to them, 20% of their income, would be significant. So there has been a suggestion that all businesses or any business at all, despite the turnover, should become VAT registered from day one of they carrying out business activities, like a lot of member states and the EU has those rules. So that would do away with the inequality, however, bring more people into the VAT net, which is not good for cutting red tape and helping small businesses. So it's a balancing.
Yeah, that's interesting that that VAT could be an area, just a percent, because it's something that's on consumption, isn't it? It's about the consumer paying for things at the end of the day. And we do know that's what the government is hoping, that the tax take rises with a boost in the economy, people getting back, spending more, rather than them having to put very politically unpopular, massive tax changes in for individuals in particular. But yeah, that the whole digitalization will also capture what's, I think, has been seen as for those non-VAT registered or below smaller businesses, the cash economy that's out there, capturing capturing tax take off a wider range of people. So is there any other areas of Brexit that you think will impact VAT or businesses?
Well, the added red tape is already well known, and the problems there. Yep. And exporting, which was within a single market before, has played havoc with many businesses. And the new rules coming in from the 1st of July, the one-stop shop, which I won't go into, quite technical, but it will impact on a lot of businesses, basically any online business that sells goods and certain services, and that will have a huge impact. And it's a simplification, but it will add complexity
for the businesses, yeah.
Not EU businesses. And since Brexit, of course, being a third country, we have to go through the hoops, and it will hit a lot of businesses quite hard.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing from everybody so far is there is complexity in the tax system. There are changes coming, so definitely all businesses need to make sure that they're on top of their real-time information, they're planning ahead, they're budgeting and forecasting, making sure their records are good so they can adapt and be ready. And I think what I'm also hearing from you is there is the lowest rates now. I think we all can predict that there's not going to be lower rates coming on any of these taxes. So making sure that people capture, if it's the right time to do so, current rates, maximising income out of companies, for instance, strikes me. Maybe making sure that all those allowances are fully used, not wasted for the next few years. I'm going to move on to what I think is probably, maybe because I deal with capital gains tax quite a lot with a lot of the entrepreneurs we deal with, the area that we have had the biggest concern from clients and have seen the biggest areas of change so far, and expecting probably changes to come, which is capital gains tax, and other capital taxes will come on to those as well on the IHT front. So capital gains tax is an area that the government has already commissioned in the past, the Office of Tax Simplification, to do a report on looking at it. They're keen on harmonising taxes, as Peter talked about, or making things a fair playing field for people operating in different structures. So they actually have commissioned a very large report on capital gains tax and what is it fair, what could change, what's reasonable. Nothing has been acted on that. That report has been out for about a year, but then it came out not long before we hit the coronavirus impact. And I think most of my clients breathed a sigh of relief when in this last budget there was no major change. I think all the newspapers were predicting, and there were a lot of fears, that capital gains tax rates would rise to equal income tax rates off the back of that report, which is, it's a little unfair because that's not what that report said. The report was just saying there's areas for reform and that a lot of capital gains taxes give a lot of very generous reliefs and allowances. We've already seen freezing of allowances, haven't we, Paula, I think, on the capital gains tax.
Yep, the annual exemption is staying put to April 2026, like all the other allowances.
Yeah, so even the report that came out had originally said, well, why do we even have an annual exemption? Or maybe that could be halved or cut. But so I think the government is definitely freezing, which is sort of by stealth. They haven't made any major change. But the main area, I think, that impacts entrepreneurs, and Vicky, you might comment on this, is owner-managed businesses have always had a lower rate of capital gains tax than other types of property, and they definitely have made changes there. Do you want to talk about those and what we think the future may hold?
Yeah. So yeah, just a quick recap: the entrepreneurs' relief, or what is now known as business asset disposal relief limit, the limit came in, the concept came in 2008. To try and make it a bit more simple, it came in as an annual, a lifetime limit of a 10% rate of tax if you qualified, i.e. it's a trading business and it's your personal company. Over the last few years, we've seen that limit rise up to 10 million that has been for a few years per individual. But last March came back down to 1 million per individual. So a big
the relief
cut,
far less generous, yeah.
Far less generous, and came in quite suddenly with a lot of anti-avoidance rules surrounding it for people who had tried to plan in advance for banking the 10 million pound lifetime limit. So that was a kind of cliff edge jump down to 1 million. People expected to see that go further, as Anne-Marie mentions, but I think the focus now is a bit more on the change in the capital gains tax rate in general rather than that limit. The government has said that it is very much committed to continued support of entrepreneurial activity. And that's not just supported via the business asset disposal relief. We've got EIS and SEIS, other reliefs for that type of investment. But my view is I would expect to see, if there's further changes to the business asset disposal relief, maybe lowering the lifetime limit slightly. But my view is that has taken its hit in moving down to 1 million. And it's the general rate of capital gains tax that's likely to change rather than that limit. Maybe further complexity in that reform for more fairness comes at the cost of complexity. So I'm suspecting probably more rules for businesses that are friendly. Agreed. And entrepreneurial.
So I think we haven't got a crystal ball, but it is clear from everything on the recommendations the government has taken and from their statements that capital gains tax is an area that we would expect to see rates change, because current rates are 10 or 20%, and if it's residential property, 28%, and some reliefs and significantly lower than income tax rates. I think from everything I've read on their response, they recognise that capital is not something, people investing in assets and holding, is not something that should be taxed at exactly the same rate as income tax rates. There will continue to be some reliefs, but I think people could expect some increase in those rates. And so, Paul, I don't know if you've got any views on what people, individuals can do in the short term to capture some of those lower rates now rather than waiting.
Well, obviously, just reviewing the capital gains tax and perhaps transferring something into a trust. I mean, that is one option, that you can actually create a disposal. That's another whole topic on trust. I mean, you cannot benefit yourself. You can have to put sort of children in as beneficiaries, but it is a possible way of actually capturing that capital gain if you want to do that. That's really the main, or to look at losses and see if you've got any gains and losses that you can then sell in the same tax year and reduce the tax on the gain now by using your losses.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky decision. We've had quite a few clients who have made decisions to take offers for sales of their business or things like that, thinking, well, actually, even if the rate changed from 10 to 20%, how much extra would I need to get for my business in the future to make up for that differential in tax? So I think it is a tricky time for business owners, and particularly those that have got their eye on perhaps an exit or a sale in the medium term. But I think it's quite clear. I don't think there's going to be an overnight change. I could be proved wrong in the next budget. I think the government is clearly saying that reform of taxes, totally a major reform, is unlikely to be something they're considering. But actually the rate change, that's my personal view. I don't know if either Vicky or Paula have got any other comments on.
No, all I've heard is, again, some rumours that perhaps the rate could be, 28% across the board on shares as well. I wouldn't be surprised if that came in.
I think further categories of asset, as you say, so they can have the differential in different rates for different things.
I think that's definitely one on the card. So Paula, one of the other capital taxes that has had a lot of coverage in the press and has had things looked into is a wealth tax. Plenty of speculation about wealth tax. Have you got views on whether that is something that they would consider?
I think I think it'd be highly unlikely that they'd introduce it, but a new government, they certainly may have a different view. The Wealth Tax Commission actually reported back in December 20 that they thought maybe a one-off wealth tax would be more acceptable than an annual wealth tax. But again, the administering of that has its problems. Other countries have tried to introduce it and it's been extremely unpopular. But having said that, there is a huge debt and it could be come in. It would obviously bring in a substantial amount.
But what we're hearing from the government or people who've sat on those committees is they think it's an unlikely area to be adopted. So people should not be sort of looking at giving up their wealth.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think it'd be any rush to bring that in at all.
Yeah. Okay. In light of, got some questions here. What is the rate of CGT payable when you sell a second home? The regime, I've got a question there that's popped up.
Well, it's the same rate as a residential house. It is 28%.
So the only impact on tax of second homes, I suppose, is the stamp duty land tax rate. Otherwise, it's treated as any other capital taxes. That's the only impact of having second homes. So 28% for all residential property that you don't have relief as your
main residence.
Other residence, there's also a question about freelance contractors. Obviously, it's one for you, Peter. Freelance contractors seem to be a continual target for the revenue. Do you think we'll see the end of personal service companies, or?
I think that the revenue seemed to be committed to circumstances where they feel people have incorporated purely for the reasons of taxation advantages and not because commercially that's the right thing to do, as Anne-Marie was saying earlier. I think there's clearly a direction of travel, which is to make the perceived tax benefits of incorporation perhaps lower. So maybe looking at changes to dividends, making changes to the way that self-employed people pay national insurance to try and make it less attractive to go down the road of contracting or having your own company. I do think that give it a couple of years for this April's changes to bed in, I do think that the government will be back for more in that particular area. I think that, that they will always be looking at that and saying, we would prefer to have people on PAYE because ultimately we get more money and we get it quicker. So I don't see that that's going to change anytime soon.
And many of the other things they've put in, or even in their response to the report, the tax report about COVID, they did state that they felt some of the differential between operating as a personal service company or as an individual or an employee, they had taken away some of those advantages already by previous changes in dividend rates. And now by increasing the corporate tax rates, they feel they've taken steps in that direction. But they're not committed to, there's no future changes. Yeah,
I think they will probably give it a year or two to see the impact of the April 21 off payroll changes.
Yeah.
And if they feel that that's not led to either a significant upturn in people in employment, or if they feel that it's forced people to change behaviour into something else that the government would feel it doesn't like, I think we can expect to see more in that area. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a question which is about trusts, Paula. Do you have to be careful using trusts in wills in respect of care fee planning? Have you got a comment on that? Is that something you can comment on or have an answer? Is trust something you come across?
I think if the question is, if you set up a will and you put a nil rate bound trust to come in within your will, that protects the 325,000, the nil rate band. So they're still very popular. Where they are attacked is if on the first death, someone tried to do a deed of variation to that will, or and try and later put the nil rate band in and protect it, then the care home people can actually say, no, that's been a deliberate action. You've deliberately varying the will and it won't stand up and they will attack it. But if the will is done many, many years ahead and you generally create that trust within your will on your death, then that does protect it.
Okay, great, thanks for that. I've got another question about making tax digital. Obviously, the question is how do businesses get ready? So I'll front that one myself. In terms of making tax digital is about having digital records and up-to-date record keeping. So any business needs to not be scrabbling around for their records 3 months, 6 months down the line. Getting real-time information, keeping records in a digital format, even if it doesn't need to report to the revenue now, any business that we know, landlord business or individual business, starting to keep records through a bit of digital software will see the benefits quite quickly in terms of being on top of their own finances, their cash flow, getting all the connections up. It'll help get on top. So there's great benefits to getting ready, certainly by the time making tax digital reporting requirements to the revenue, as in sending in real-time information quarterly about your income, your expenses, your profits, and then doing a reckoning up at the end of the year, you'll be ready for it. So just the discipline of getting on top of your records more regularly and having them kept, not just in a paper format or an Excel format, but in a digital format, and linking those to your bank accounts and having the benefits of the type of things that digital software can do is definitely one way to get ready for that side of things. Yeah, that's great. So in summary, I think we've got no more questions there. If there's anybody who wants to ask a question, as Joe said, very welcome to take questions personally or to drop us points later. I hope this has been useful in helping you see what's known already, which is, there's reports out there, the government has said they're not going to do any major changes till the economy's recovered. So in the short term, they have frozen things. They work to a policy of trying to set a 5-year and a 10-year plan. We're already couple of years into their 5-year plan. So for the next few years, I think people can know that there are frozen rates. We've got some foresight of corporate tax changes. We can't tell you with certainty there'll be no major changes to rates in the next few years, The most likely one that there may be in the next couple of years are capital gains tax rates. But definitely beyond that 5 years, unless the economy was absolutely flying and tax takes were up across the board, it's difficult to see that there would the tax rates we have across the board for VAT, income tax, capital gains tax, corporate tax can stay low for everybody. There are likely to be increases, but the government is trying very hard to balance that with boosting the economy. So we shall see that go. But I think the main thing is, as always, although we're tax advisors, clients must not let that tax tail wag the dog. You do have to think about what's the right commercial decision for you. There's no point cashing in everything now and pulling everything out and paying loads of tax if it's not things you need. There are always ways to plan going ahead, but starting to think ahead in terms of what your current structures are, how many businesses in the group, do you need so many, do you need to protect assets, cash flow, is definitely sensible things to do. I don't know if anyone else has got a comment on the key thing you would recommend across your area to clients to do now to get themselves future-proofed, or things that you see other clients are doing that might be of use to people to think about. Vicky, do you have a few ideas from the corporate tax side of things?
Yeah,
looking at their structures.
I think, as you say, it's linking up all the different areas and the direction of travel. We're all moving to a making tax digital environment. Businesses are used to forecasting, but it's about making that forecasting really useful rather than just doing your equals 19% tax on the bottom line. We need a bit more time spent on, as you say, do we need all the companies in the group? How is it going to impact this new tax rate and how it's divided amongst you? How is it going to impact your spend? A proper modelling based on that tax impact as well could have a lot more significant impact than businesses might think.
And there's a lot of reliefs out there for corporates, particularly in the R&D and...
Absolutely. Various capital allowances, R&D, museums relief, lots of little unknown things that are there. As you say, simplicity doesn't equal fairness. So more complexity is there, if you like, to try and make the tax system fairer. There are a lot of reliefs. Speak to your advisors. Know what is applicable in your situation to help you bring that rate down.
And then, Paul, on the income tax side, I'm seeing a lot of clients starting to think about equalisation of assets and income across families, you know, sort of in readiness for that, and making sure rather than staying, just taking what they need, taking right up to the basic rate band or 100,000 band, just maximising income to have some tax paid income sitting ready waiting. For the future, are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I am. I mean, obviously, I would always recommend sort of standing back and looking, planning, sort of transferring assets between husband and wife, making sure that you're getting using up your basic rate bands and all of that planning. I would also suggest that people take stock, look at their assets, and think about inheritance tax planning as well. As we said earlier, just making the use of the allowances and you know, in case they stop pets. I mean, there's talk of that. You know, so at the moment we can give away assets and, you know, survive 7 years, and that's a great way of reducing your estate. If they took that away, that would be a big shock. And so yeah, I would recommend doing some IHT planning, but then I would, because I'm a specialist and I love it.
Peter, what about for employers? Are there any nuggets that you would recommend to employers to put in place now?
Employers is at the moment that they need to keep abreast of what's happening in the world of who is and who isn't an employee. The courts are very active in this area. The government is very active in this area, as are HMRC. And whenever more and more people are brought into the employment net, that will increase the employment costs for businesses, partly in taxation, but partly in other costs as well. Though that I think is the short term thing, and if the business currently has workers who aren't direct employees, they need to be very comfortable that's the correct way to treat them, because the climate's very definitely shifting on that.
Great. Okay, Joe, I think we've covered all the areas we wanted to talk about, and I think I've picked up all the questions that are in there, so I'll hand back to you for any final points on closing down the session. where people can access things and get a hold of us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you to everybody for your contribution today. That was really, really interesting and some great questions coming through. So thank you. It just remains for me really to thank all of you. So Anne-Marie, Paula, Marcus, Peter and Vicky for your contributions today. I hope everybody found that useful and I shall look forward to our next webinar. Thank you.